Mike, I understand that you left school and trained as an engineer. Tell us all
Yes,
about that.
in Newport, in Monmouthshire. I was there 5 years as an apprentice fitter and turner. And after I became a skilled man, I did various jobs in different places. And after attending to, I think it was the Bath and Wells show, got interested in talking to someone about forestry and decided to join to become a forester. So it was a forest called Cwm Cân, which was part of Ebwy Forest, which is in just outside Newport. Used to travel there for about 2 years. And eventually the day came when I had to go up to Gwydyscawr Forest in North Wales to attend the school there for 2 years. So we took had to take bikes, everything had to go on the train. We took our bikes on the train, because that was our main transport apart from a lorry. And we did all the jobs that a forester would do. And each time you had a different gang each week, and you had to make out the work tickets and the cost of each item and how much it cost to do an acre of ground and various plans of the forest, marking trees and nursery work. It was all done throughout the 2 years. And when we eventually passed out, my first posting was to Towy, which was right up in Cardiganshire, right Aberystwyth way, miles from my hometown of Newport. So I went there in 1955.
Had they started planting them?
Yes, they had. They'd started at one end of the forest about 1953, I think. And I met the forester, I.O. Evans, after going through eight gates and my motorbike to get to the headquarters. And after a look around for a bit, a new area came on stream in Pontrefedigaid, or as the locals call it, Bont.
Yes.
But at Dalawen, which is right in the heart of the forest, there were a great many interesting places. There was a large oak wood, and there were nesting of the kites there. There was about two pairs. And where we were felling the trees and things like that in the forest, we had to move frequently because the kites used to build a false nest. So we were chasing around after the kites. And I believe now there's a very large kite centre near Aberystwyth with
Yes, there is.
70 or 80 pairs or
Well, it varies
more.
from, but it's a large number of pairs of
Is
kites these
it?
days, yes.
Yes. Well,
But so you were involved then at that point in the protection of these kites then?
Yes, that was part of our. We used to build cages, and I always, when passing in his Land Rover, would pick up any carrion or a dead sheep, put it in the cage, which had a funnel at the top, so the kite could get the crows, which used to peck the birds,
Yes.
lambs, used to get in, they couldn't get out.
So it was for catching the crows.
So it was catching the crows, which helped the farmers a lot, because they were carrion crows were very cruel things and used to peck the eyes of the lambs out.
But I also believe that they used to pester the red kites as well.
Yes, they'd mob the kites, yes, they would. And of course, we had to keep water in every day as we passed, fresh water, and new carrion as we saw it, or anything that a hunt had killed, or anything like that. And that was to attract the birds, these horrible carrion crows. And then did various jobs around Dalawen, and the day came then to move to Tregaron, was the nearest town. And I lodged up the mountain at a shepherd's cottage called Diffus.
Yes, I know it well.
You know it well. Mother and father and his father, two girls and a boy, Ivan, Matt and Iain. And Elsie was the wife, and Ivan Rhys was the father, and the old man, Ivan, was there when I was there.
So you remember the grandfather, the father, and the son then?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly, all in the same house, and the two girls.
Yes.
And I lodged there very happily, and the Land Rover would pass the front gate in the morning to go up to Dalawen or up to another part.
This is the Forestry Land Rover.
Yes, the Forestry Land Rover.
Yes.
And we went at ordinary time in the morning, and half hour was added on at the end of the night to come back. So it all pleased most people, really, because it worked both ways. And then it was a very old house with peat burning fires, oil lamps. Elsie made her own butter in big crocks, handfuls of salt. And we had to turn the thing to separate the milk to make the butter first.
The separator?
Yeah, the separator.
Yeah.
Oh, many a turn on that. And then, of course, on the side of the peat fire was an oven for breaking bread. She used it occasionally. Then she'd get the ironing out, and that was a big affair with big chunks of iron in it and a little trap door at the back. And you heated these up in the fire, popped them in the oven, and you had one heating, one in the iron. And she'd dash away with the iron and had the tongs then, pull another hot one out, put it back in the oven, that's right. Then in the iron, off I go again. Then at night then, a little bit of coal would go in the middle of the peat. Peats would be stacked up around the fire in the winter. And Elsie had the big bellows at the side. Just a few puffs in the morning, and up would go the peat fire. Of course, the smell of the peat fire was very, what you call it first, a bit unusual, but you soon got used to it. Of course, in the corner was a big lump of Welsh bacon hanging up, with an eighth of an inch of lean on it.
Yeah.
But it was too much for me, so I used to have boiled egg, and scrambled egg, and things like that. And the children all had barra tea, which was milk and tea, chunks of bread cut up, and a big piece of cheese. That was their morning breakfast. And then they'd have fried eggs or bacon, looking decidedly black from a huge pan on the over the peat fire. And then, of course, they'd eventually go off to school in those days. And the old man, Ivan, used to sit in the corner by this big fireplace smoking the very strongest tobacco you could ever imagine. And he lived to about 81, because he died when I was there. And he was on the mountain at 12 years old with an annual sum of £12. Very little time off, only for...
As a farm servant?
Well, yes, a tenant, yes, he was, that's right.
No, as a farm servant?
Yes, he didn't own.
No, right. So you worked for somebody else?
Oh, yes, he did. And he was hired, as I say, under the clock in Aberystwyth for a year, and virtually tied. And in fact, they were called servants.
Oh, yes.
Which I never got to like at all, but they were always called servants. And I thought it was a very derogatory term for people. But they were called that. And their life was quite simple, but homely. They used to attend dramas, as you should call them. They used to do a spot of fishing.
Even though you were a lodger, you lived as part of the family?
Oh, very
then?
Much so, yes.
Was it very different to what you were used
to? Oh, very much, yes. At home, of course, it was a modern house in Newport. And I ended up straight away on the mountain in Shepherd's Cottage. But the welcome I had and all the pleasantness from the children and the way of life was so different to me that I fell into it and really got absorbed with it. And eventually, of course, I had to move to Tregaron because a new place was opening up at Pontevendigaid. And I believe the farm was owned by a Mr. James. It was a big house, Pant of Edwin House, and he made his fortune in London in the dairies.
That's right. And cinemas, even.
And cinemas, was
yeah.
it?
Yes.
Yes. And I think now, and the Stedford is running his name,
oh,
isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And prizes from
quite large,
David
right.
James.
David James,
David
yes.
James, yes, that's right. Well, we started from there, of course. And there were two big woods as you went into the forest. And as you entered the forest, there was a place called Strata Florida, which is a very ancient ruins and of monks. And through the woods then, and you came to this house which nestled in the woods, Pando Edwin House. And then on up the road, and you reached the top of the hill, of the open mountain. And of course, there we started to fell some trees. And we even gave Cardiff a nasty shock because we exported some timber from the local railway station of Tregaron. But of course, being a new forest, they must have wondered where it came from.
So this was an existing private woodland?
This was an existing private woodland. And much to IO's delight, we felled the trees and did it all and had to pay the wagons and all the rest of it, and we'd go in the lorry and load it up with the boys in the yard in Tregaron. And it was exported then down to South Wales, to the coal mines which were going then, of course. And there were lots of fun with that business because they didn't expect that. It was
But you were there to plant trees, not to cut them down.
We were there really to plant them. And of course I was so pleased to feel that an export from Towy Forest had come so early from.
Yeah.
But I, of course there was a man who came there from Cardiff one day, Mr. Fitzherbert, known as Fitz. And he came and saw our work and dragging logs over the rivers and Lord knows what with lorries, stopped it at once. Far too expensive. Leave it alone. So of course we never did any more felling after Fitz came. He was a man who used to travel all the forests of South Wales and really troubleshooter, really. Anything was wrong or he thought was dangerous, but he'd put the clampers on it straight away. So, of course, we went back then to planting and so on like that.
Do you remember, you said you mentioned the Difford family. Do you remember other families up on the mountain there? Because it was Bear Mountain at that time, I presume.
Yes, that's right. Well, further up the mountain past Diffus, of course, was Nantrwch, which had a large colony of boys.
Well, Nantllwyd.
Nantllwyd.
Yes.
Nantrwch.
Yes.
I think there was another one, Nantman.
Yes, there's Nantman and Nantrwch.
But I never saw much of Nantman. It was off the beaten track a little bit.
Yes, well, go back to the Nantllwyd boys. You remember them, do you?
Yes, of course. They used to go past the house at late at night. You used to hear them very often. I believe one boy had been in the Welsh Guards, John Nantllwyd,
yes.
He was still there.
He's still there, in fact.
And of course there were the other people up that way we knew, were John Musglas.
Yes.
And I can't think of the daughter's name. Betty.
Peggy.
Peggy. Peggy, that's right. Well, she opened a riding school after, and she lived in Musglas next to Sora Money.
That's right.
Which was the chapel of the mountain, which was, must have been 100 years old, I don't know, very old. And I think was occasionally open for big festivals. But as many as 60 people used to go there years ago with their bowler hats and their family and their food and stay there all day and go into the chapel, of course, for services. All that gone and many farms around lying in ruins. I think there was about 8 farms around us, 6 or 8 farms, who were still going. And of course, forestry then came and this top land was sold and planted with trees. And
from my information, all the farms were sold except 3, and they were Nantman, Musglas, and Nantllwyd.
That's right, that would be the 3, yes. I can
These are the 3.
Nantman didn't go much on forestry, I don't think, at all.
Right. Well, these were the 3 nearest farms to Sora Money as well.
Yes, that's right.
And then further up, because Nantrwch and those places were sold.
Yes, that's right.
So what were your main duties then when you were there? I mean, you said you were posted to Pantyfedwen. Was that like a subsidiary of the main depot?
Yes,
was it?
Subsidiary of Towy Forest.
Right. And what was the depot used for there then? For clerical purposes? Or
no, there was no depot as such. I mean, the depot still stayed in Dalawen.
Yes.
And I had to travel with Land Rover then to get money for wages from Clendeverry Bank.
Right.
And I had to travel all the way back then to pay men.
Yeah.
On a Thursday, I think it was. And anything we wanted had to be drawn from there, really.
Right.
In the way of supplies. We had a lorry and about 8 men. All locals, all bar one, Welsh-speaking. And we used to go, our depot, the depot was at up the mountain, I can't just remember the name of it, Vanog.
Oh yes, Vanog.
Vanog, which is a very remote place overlooking the Towy River.
Right.
And used to be able to see how many counties from the top. It was a very high
experience. Was there a building there then at Vanog?
No, there was a shed there, a barn.
Right.
Which we used to do when the weather was bad, heavy rain or snow. We used to make stakes, gates, guards and things like that. And that was done by the men that we carried up in the Land Rover every morning.
Yes.
And back down then to Tregaron. Because they were all Tregaron men around that end, you see.
Right.
And then, of course, as that finished, we went up to Punt of Edwin.
Right.
And planting and felling and draining. And often had to take one of the men with me to the farmers if we wanted to cross his land or put a drain, because very often they didn't speak very much English.
Right.
It was so, not remote, but they were the older people.
Yes.
And I used to take one of the men with me to translate, really. And I always found them helpful and never had any trouble, really. I mean, forestry was a new thing for them, but it provided new opportunities for the farmers and the farm boys and people who lived there. And the land, of course, was sold, and they very often moved then down to the village, the farmers, and the house then was left really as a bit of a depot for us, and usually a barn. So that's how it really worked. And then huge areas up there were planted and ploughed, giant ploughs, and they were all paid on piecework, as was planting paid on piecework. And you'd have so much 100 plants, and the tractor driver had so much per acre. And all the forests in Vanog were marked out by, well, really, I and myself, with piles of stakes on the Land Rover, getting bogged down very often, because there were no roads, marking out the roads and rides and the compartments of the forests. And really, really a rough old time there, because it was a very remote place, especially when the snow came down.
Tell me, you know, you were saying as these farms were bought, there was obviously a farmhouse and farm buildings. Did you then use these farm buildings for your own use?
Oh, yes.
As shelter or to provide shelter to do some work?
Yes. And as little storage depots, really. You to store wire or netting or stakes and things like that.
All right.
There was no nothing very valuable, really. And then, also we used to keep with jerry cans of petrol, because if you got stuck up there, you'd had it. So we had our kutches of petrol about the place.
Yes.
Which was kept usually kept under lock and key, really, in these old houses, because they were still really in quite good condition, really. So very often we weren't going in the house, but we'd just stay in the barns. But,
do you remember some bad weather up there?
Oh yes, yeah, very bad weather. I can remember Ozzy getting lost up there and nearly died in the snow. It was such a terrible...
Oh, well, I've heard that story. You were there at that time.
Yes, I was there at that time. Have you heard that?
Yes, he went to look for some papers or something.
Yeah, something like that. And it was a bit touch and go, really. And we remember the girls, our farmer's daughters, used to pass through Punt of Edwin to go up riding on top of the mountain. And we'd say good morning, and you wouldn't see him coming back. So we had to tell someone, so we told the police. And they went up, and of course this girl, the horse had thrown her off and she'd broken her ankle. And she was on her own, of course, which was a bit dodgy. And that's, you know, it was, and you wouldn't see anyone for 3 days up there on your own little group. Because when you saw someone, it was time to have a little chat, and they moved on. And as I say, this young lady was lucky to have spoken to us, and we, they were, she was saved, but the police went up and brought her back down.
So she had to be rescued then?
Yeah, she did.
People had to go and look for her?
Yes. That was just an indication how remote these places were.
Yes.
It's really not a place for someone who doesn't know their way around, because even experienced people, and really experienced, can get caught out.
Yes.
Either in floods or snow and ice.
Or mist.
Or mist, yes, of course. Yes, that was quite nasty. So all those were things that were done.
Now, when you got to Towie, Mike, you're an English-speaking Welshman from Newport.
Oh, yes.
And as you already said, most of the, or nearly all the, yeah, the workers were Welsh speakers.
Yes.
Did you find this a problem at all?
A little bit at first. But after a little while, they could see I was a permanent fixture and was interested in the people and the countryside. And 9 out of 10 would speak English in my presence, as a matter of politeness, really. And the only time Welsh was spoken was sometimes when jokes were played on me and things were put in my haversack that weren't supposed to be there. And of course, after a little while, I learned a little Welsh. And some of the boys who liked that sort of humour, and these were the men that did the work, and you accepted them as they were. And the words carrig came up, and I knew straight away that was stones. And of course, they ended up in my haversack. But the men, of course, didn't know that I spoke that little bit of Welsh. But as I caught them out on this, they never, you know, there were no recriminations, and they were quite quite pleased that I had learnt a little Welsh. In fact, I tried to learn Welsh from Park Place in Cardiff. I used to run a course on the wireless. But I'm afraid I did try, but never succeeded to learn an awful lot of Welsh. But the Welsh ways and the customs, I took to like a duck to water.
And enjoyed them?
And enjoyed them.
And so it wasn't it wasn't a setback to you that you couldn't?
Oh, no. Initially, of course it was, because I couldn't understand. But as I came into the room or wherever I was, they would cease to speak Welsh, really, and revert to English.
Where did you lodge when you went to Tregaron?
Well, in the village itself, with Mrs. Jones, I had lodgings there.
Right.
Because when we went to Pontevedrin, the roads from Diffus were so treacherous in the winter, snow and ice and fog, that I had to move to the village. So I moved lodgings to there and was picked up by the Land Rover in
Tregaron,
you see, on the way through. So that was quite... it suited everyone, really.
So that was more of a social thing for you,
oh,
then,
yes,
living in Tregaron?
It was a council house. And the lady, I think the lady was a widow. And that one daughter, Iwana, I think her name was Iwana, she was a very big one with the earth.
Right.
And used to go to Llangrannog and places in the summer camps.
Right.
She was very strong. And then there was a boy and another girl. And they worked on the farm. One worked on a farm.
Right.
So I got on quite well with them.
Right.
They were all well speaking, of course.
Yes.
And I stayed there until Pontevedrin's developed into a small holding and a house. And as I wasn't married at the time, I had to move. I'd move then down to Margam Forest,
right,
near Portarlwyd.
So... How would you conclude and describe your times up in Towie Forest then?
Oh, a joy, really. I loved it there, and it was very sad to go. But because the house was available to a family, and a small holding, I had to move. So I came down then to Markham Forest. But I was very sorry to go, because I missed the life and the laid-back life that I wasn't used to before I went. And it got into the way of it, and that was nice. But,
Mike, let's go back to the forestry school. I know it's a long time ago, but not many people have told me about that experience in forestry school. You were saying earlier that you were in charge for a week in turns. What other things did they prepare you for in the forestry school?
Well, really, by putting you in charge of a little gang, say about 10 men, you had to fill forms in to say how much work had been carried out, what area of ground had been covered, and the cost. And it was all orientated really to make you learn about the cost of things, how high or low a cost would be according to the ground that you did and the conditions you worked under, whether you worked on piecework or day work. And of course, that way you learned to try and economise with things and how to get the best from, if you were felling timber, to cut the best way and the best way to extract the timber. And of course, Gwydir Forestry School was near Capel Curig, and it's a really remote area just on the foothills of Snowdonia, really. And the mountain we worked underneath really was Moel Siarbod, which is a big conical mountain, usually covered with snow in the winter. And very often ice and snow used to stay on the roads for 2 or 3 months at a time. To make your way to the pub was quite a hazardous journey sometimes. And our main transport at that time, and we had to take up on the train, of course, were our push bikes. And sometimes we'd be farmed out to another forest. At one time we went to Corwin and marking trees because they were shorter men. So we descended on this forest marking trees for felling. Well, while we were there, a friend of mine who lives in Cwm Gors was a real handful. And we found a wildcat in the tree, and it was hung up and had been fossilised. It was hanging from a branch in the tree. So we couldn't let that pass. So we smuggled it back in the lorry, packed it up, and sent it to one of the instructors. Well, this was not helped at all. We all had an assembly that it wasn't done. There were various signs pinched from castles. Stagecoaches vanished until the owners of the pubs had to take the wheels off. And signs banning peacocks and various other things appeared in the hall.
So this was men being boisterous?
There was really college, nothing else there, right, apart from the pub, you see, which was a bit of a hike up towards Capel Curig or down to Betsacoy. And that was the only, I suppose, outlet we had.
Did they actually prepare you for dealing with men, i.e. the manual workers in the forest?
Well, yes, they did, I suppose, by these little lessons that we had. And also, at times, we had to give what they call a lecture. It could be on any subject in forestry. And I think it lasted an hour. And you just talked to all your fellow men and to the instructors, of course, and they saw how you performed in public speaking, really. And it was really quite an ordeal, because to talk for an hour was quite a long time.
You said that you also went on an exchange visit.
Oh, yes. Well, we were there. We went to Thetford Forest, which I'm afraid is in the news now. And we were there for 6 weeks, and the men from Thetford came to Gwydir. And it was an exchange course. And while we were there, of course, we did a lot of felling because it's nearly all pine trees there. All the hedges were of pine. It was all very frosty and very cold. The rainfall was about 13 inches there as opposed to about 68 in Gwydir. And quite different conditions. all the timber as it was felled had to be peeled with a little spade so as the beetles and the worms didn't get into the timber and spread into the surrounding trees. It was then cut up and some was moved to Brandon Depot to be creosoted under pressure for fencing, well, almost anywhere then. They used to come to the depot then for stakes after they dried out, and that was the burn. But
are you saying that because of the difference in geography and the different conditions, things were slightly different in the forest?
They were. And the attitude of the people was very different. It were very, very laid back in East England. For instance, we took our bikes there on the train. If you had a puncture, I took my motorbike actually, they'd say, yes, leave it at the garage. They'd say, come back tomorrow. Have you done the car, the bike? No, we'll do it tomorrow. And it went on like this. And you, in the end, you adopted their attitude that it didn't matter that you didn't have it that day, you'd have it in a week's time. And the Americans, of course, were big bases near there, and they used to come to the village.
What kind of bases?
Air Force bases. Right. Mildenhall, I think, was American. Right. I think Lake and Heath was RAF. And they used to come into the local villages and wipe the floor on the darts board with the locals. They loved the laid-back life. Were sorry to go back to the States, really. And the same men came in and were accepted by the locals, really, because they liked this laid-back life as opposed to some of the American.
Right. So the purpose of this exchange was for you to experience the different conditions of trees growing then, as well as everything else.
Yes, that's right.
And did they do this for everybody, or was it just your group?
Oh no,
It was a standard
procedure. I think Scottish people used to come down then. Sometimes there was a school in Scotland.
Right.
Not sure where, but they used to come down to exchange.